Welcome back, everyone. I always enjoy the way that in course materials, Joan will label things fall semester, winter semester. You know? Yeah, it's not spring. I really like the honesty. Before I leap into Daniel, I wanted to share something with you. First, I wanted to express, again, my appreciation about the kind of outpouring of prayer and consolation I got for you on the death of my father back in early December, and how much I appreciated that, especially the prayers. My father, for many years, wrote for The Wanderer. Some of you may be familiar with The Wanderer. He wrote in the 80s and 90s, and then when I was in La Crosse, I wrote for The Wanderer for about 6 years or so. I wrote a column on Catholic social teaching. And so I've been writing some things recently, and Joseph Matt, who's the editor, asked me to write something on my father. And I thought, you know, if I write something on my father, I don't just want it to be sort of in memoriam so-and-so. You know, I want to have... So it's entitled, The Anthropologist Who Hated Relativism. A tribute to my father. I thought that was a nice man bites dog sort of headline. And what I will do is, you know, just sort of scan it. Maybe I can turn it into an Adobe Doc, just scan the two pages and forward it to you if you're interested in reading. Be happy to do that. Because it's true. My father, his doctoral research as an anthropologist was Hunter's Point. Hunter's Point is a black ghetto that sticks off of the Fillmore Mission District in San Francisco sticks out toward Oakland. And my father would talk about how whatever kind of woolly-headed values thinking that he had, going into that, was completely beat out by that experience. Because what you saw in Hunter's Point was that the choices that people made mattered. And that you couldn't just go into that with some cultures have this way of doing things and other cultures have that way of doing things, and each culture is fine in its own way. You know, what he saw in Hunter's Point was just a disaster. I didn't put this in the column, but he would talk about how it is that one of the things that you do in anthropology, you have these what are called thematic apperception tests. They're pictures, and they're a standard set of these pictures, and you have this test subject make up stories about the pictures, and it sort of tells you kind of what's going on with them psychologically. Well, there's a famous picture of a boy just looking at a violin, and my father said that he would listen to these young people make up stories about these pictures, and you get two kinds. You get some people who they look at the picture and say, "He look at that violin, and he don't want to play that violin, and that's just a lot of work, and he want to go out and play." And then you have other people. He played violin, and he's real good, and he gets famous. And so the idea that somehow you would invest effort over a long period of time, and that would get you a certain result, in a lot of his test subjects, that was just kind of a foreign idea. So you've got a society in which they can't connect long-term effort to some sort of result at the end of that. You know, I mean, and so what my father said, you see this generationally. One line that he came back with, this young man was complaining, you know, I went to work for the man, and he wanted me to work all day. And then he wanted me to come in and work all day the next day too. And he wanted me to do this 5 times a week. This young man was just appalled. But again, when that's kind of your outlook, there are just so many things in life that just become uphill for you. When he came to Alaska and was working with Alaska Natives, so the Athabascans, Aleuts, Eskimos, he was seeing these very high rates of what's described as burnt child syndrome. Burnt child syndrome is when you believe yourself to be incapable of love and incapable of giving love. And it came from these completely abusive circumstances in which a lot of natives are raised. So, about the time that a baby is, I don't know, about 2 or 3 years old, a lot of these young mothers just, the baby has a will of its own, and it used to be cute and adorable, and it's just not cute and adorable anymore. And of course, when you have that just systemically, again, you're hindered from carrying out so many things. I mean, if with Bird Child Syndrome, how are you ever going to grow up to have a stable family or stable marriages or so on? So those kinds of experiences very early on just really gave my father the sense that there are cultures that are healthy, and there are cultures that are just a disaster for the people in them. And you simply can't go around looking at all these different cultures and say, well, they're all good in their own way. There are cultures that, and it's not to say there aren't problems with our own culture. It's not as if he was looking at it somehow our culture was perfect and these other cultures were bad. No, there are things in our culture that help people, but clearly there are things in our culture that don't. I mean, that's what a moral law or a natural law should allow for. It isn't a way for you to simply affirm yourself. A moral law or a natural law is to say that there are certain things based on human nature that are good for human beings, and insofar as cultures live those out and achieve them, they're going to be healthy, happy cultures. And insofar as cultures don't, then life becomes a lot harder, and those cultures simply, at some level, implode. Even though my father, most of my upbringing, I mean, he was away from the church, he was out of the church. He wouldn't have used the term moral law or natural law. He didn't use those terms, but he always inculcated this idea that there are certain ways of living which allow you to be happy, which allow you to function, which allow you to get along with other people, and there are other things which are simply just self-destructive. And I've told you before, every year with sophomores, I'm always working with their relativism, their belief that there is no sort of absolute right and wrong or absolute standard. All these cultures teach different things. They all have different values. They all have different beliefs. Who am I to say that culture is wrong or this culture is wrong and so on? And I don't know that I've said this to you before, but one of the things that I always struggle with a little bit in dealing with that is I never thought that. I never thought that. Maybe you, when I describe that to you, you think, well, come on, don't all young people kind of have that stage? That's just part of your intellectual development. I never thought that way. But I think part of the reason that I didn't was because of my father. I think part of it was he immersed me in these experiences that just made it very clear there aren't all sorts of different behaviors out there which are an option and are going to allow human beings to have a happy life. There just aren't. There are all sorts of choices you can make which are just bad choices. And you can't, and people, I think they know that, young people know that individually, but somehow when it's a different culture out there, somehow that's different. So if I say that the brown people do this and it's bad, okay, now I'm judging brown people and that's evil. But my father gave me the very clear sense that there are certain ways of life which are just a disaster for the people who try to live them. Now, by the way, after my father's time, by the 80s, there were already anthropologists who were kind of starting to break out of this. And one book that I use with sophomores is a book by UCLA anthropologist Robert Edgerton. And the book is called Sick Societies. And it's all about how it is. And the subtitle of the book is The Myth of Primitive Harmony. The myth of primitive harmony, that somehow primitive people are happier just by the very fact that they're primitive. And for those of you, what exposure, where would you see this? A lot of the cowboy and Indian movies that have been made in, I would say, the last 40 years or so, at some level have the primitive harmony. So for those of you who are older, you'll remember A Man Called Horse, right, with Richard Harris, where unhappy Western cowboy man goes and lives with the Indians and describes true happiness. Okay, for those of you who are younger, Dances with Wolves, where unhappy Western soldier man goes and lives with the Indians and discovers true happiness. Okay.